Which would frighten you more, a slave who is crazy or a slave who is sane and sees you clearly?
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are a podcast bringing you all the updates and reviews that you really need to figure out if those Book Talk famous books are worth fitting into your busy schedule. I'm Casey.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Catherine. And today we actually have a very special guest who has appeared on this podcast before. And we are really happy to welcome her back. Caitlin.
Hi. Hello, everyone. I'm also Caitlin B, and I'm very excited to be here today because the last podcast I was there for was for a book I hated. And spoiler, I did not hate this book.
Also, what I just realized, Caitlin joined us for episode 9. This is episode 109.
Wow, you guys can have me back every 100 episodes.
Oh my God. Or maybe sooner. I mean... But yeah, so this episode is actually going through a book that is a retelling of a classic literature book, James, which is the retelling of The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn by Mark Twain. And it follows the slave Jim and his experience throughout that part of the novel. So it's that kind of retelling. So if you've read Huckleberry Finn or Tom Sawyer, that's where it's coming from and telling a very unique perspective to this. And I hear that actually, Caitlin, you recommended this book to Caitlin, and that's what got you on this podcast.
Okay. You need to specify which Caitlin. That was crazy.
Caitlin Bartlett.
Both Caitlin B's. It's very confusing. Yeah, you have these whole last names. Yes, I had seen this one on Book Talk and Bookstagram, and I listened to a few book podcasts, but one in particular, she had gotten an ARC for this and she had talked about how good it was. And I know I had a great reading experience with Huck Finn when I read that in high school, and my English class like discussed it together. And we'll probably get into this, but Huck Finn is controversial. It has some tough stuff in it. Mm-hmm. And I had a really great high school English teacher, and like reading Huck Finn was in the curriculum. And so we had to read it. And she did a really good job of like, let's talk about the problematic stuff. And it was like, that was one of the times that I was kind of introduced to like the concept of a book club. You know, like we were seniors, we would come, we discussed the book. And so I really like enjoyed that reading experience of Huck Finn. So when I heard about James coming out, I was very intrigued and definitely wanted to read it. So I actually got it from Monstera Books, which is a new indie bookstore here in Kansas City. Whenever you guys are back, you should definitely go. And me and my family made a trip over to Overland Park to check it out. And I knew I wanted to get a book from them. And this is the one I picked. And the guy that was ringing me out was like, oh my gosh, this is so good. I just finished it. You're going to love it. So that made me even more excited to read it.
And Caitlin graciously loaned me her copy to read.
Yes.
Iconic. Caitlin always, Caitlin's always helping Caitlin's.
Right.
Okay. Well, we normally read our reviews first. So do you guys have some to share?
Yeah, there weren't a lot of funny reviews, but I did find one that I liked. It's a 3-star review from Goodreads, and it says, should have reread Twain, both me and the author.
Oh, shade. LOL. Yeah, the reviews of this book were like very serious and also very long.
And borderline racist, some of them.
Yeah, no, the 1-star reviews don't go there.
Yeah, I did not. I purposely was like, no, I'm just going to save myself that experience.
Yeah, it wasn't great. I have a 4.25 from Storygraph. It says, incredibly topical novel that educates without preaching and expands beautifully on the conversation around reading classics with very problematic prejudices. Short and to the point.
Nice.
Yeah.
I chose a similar one because I feel like it speaks to our busy girl mission, that it's a 5-star review and it says, this book gets so much buzz. It certainly doesn't need my endorsement. But it certainly does deserve each and every one of the 5 stars.
Aw.
Yeah.
Cute.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And lives up to the hype.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's definitely received hype. and it's the day we're recording this, Goodreads Choice Awards came out, and it's on a bunch of them. But the overall Goodreads rating is 4.5 out of 5, and the overall Amazon rating is 4.7 out of 5. So very popular. I think it is a Pulitzer finalist, a Booker shortlist, like very hyped right now. What were your ratings?
I think I gave it 5 stars back when I read it. I should have looked because I read it when it first came out. It's been a few months, I think, but I gave it 5 stars.
I also gave it 5 stars. I like absolutely fell in love with this book. I thought it was amazingly well written. We'll get into this in some of our discussion questions, but I also have read Huck Finn, and it was kind of a beloved childhood book for me. And so, and I've read it more than once. And so I really, really enjoyed kind of the reexamining of the narrative. Jim was one of my favorite characters, you know, James in this book, but as a child. And so it was really, really interesting for me personally, just to revisit that. And yeah, I thought it was wonderful. I thought it was inventive. I thought the almost like magical realism satire parts of it were like perfectly well done. And I have thought about it every single day since I read it. So
yeah, I also gave it 5 stars. I thought it was an amazing retelling of a classic. I never actually fully read Huck Finn, but I did read Tom Sawyer. And then I read like a children's version of Huck Finn, like a more dumbed down version, I guess is the best way to describe it. And then I also, for some reason, was in a kids acting play of Tom Sawyer when I was like 12. And I think I played Huck Finn. If
video? Is there video?
No, there is absolutely not video. Like, no. Thanks. Absolutely not. But yeah, so I was very well aware of the like material that it, source material that it came from. And I really enjoyed what it did with it and how it brought in like modern day like analysis into a classic literature while also staying true to its source material.
Mm-hmm. So I grew up in Missouri and was never made to read Mark Twain.
Really?
I read lots of books that were on the Mark Twain Award nominee list, which was like a children's literature prize. And I know the gist, you know, of all the Mark Twain stuff. I know all about Samuel Clemens. However, didn't ever read Huck Finn. I did spark note it before reading the book, so I knew which way the story was supposed to go and where it totally differed. I was like, wow. I gave this 4 stars. I do not have a beloved childhood memory of Huck Finn, so maybe that differed for me. I really did like the book a lot. I just personally was really saddened by the turn the character took at the end of the book. I didn't like how that went, and I was just personally saddened by it, and that lost a star for me.
Yeah, I felt similarly. We'll probably get into it later, but I like wavered on the 5 stars because of a certain point or something about, yeah, the character development with the main character, but I still gave 5 stars.
It was a really good book. It just got kind of dark at the end for me.
Yeah, very dark.
It does get dark. Okay, so now to our non-spoiler discussion. Was it more plot or character driven?
Well, the book is called James. So I think there's a plot. It follows the plot of Huck Finn for the most part. But I think the book is all about James and his experience, him discovering his own power, etc.
Yeah, I would say it's very close for both, like both very plot and character driven, because I typically, if I read a book fast, it's because I want to know what's going to happen with the plot. And I read this one very quickly, but I would say that it errs more on the side of character driven, even though you do want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think it's character, even though like obviously it's a callback to a book that's already been written.
Yeah. It's definitely like a reclaiming of that character and making it character driven because it is technically the same plot with some deviations. And then like it shows that he had more autonomy to the plot in this retelling. So yeah, I think it is character driven, but yeah, I could be argued either way.
For the second question, it's have you or would you read other books by the author? And I want to fully get into my history with Mark Twain because it's impressive.
Wait, we're talking about Mark Twain or Percival Everett?
Yeah, we're going to talk about both. So, my dad loved Tom Sawyer as a kid, he read Tom Sawyer to me as a child. And then because we did Tom Sawyer, then we did Huck Finn. So that was the first time I read Huck Finn. And then in high school, Huckleberry Finn was part of our high school curriculum. So I read it again in high school. And then I went to college in Missouri with, you know, Catherine and Kaylin. And then because Mark Twain grew up in Missouri, I took a whole class on Mark Twain and I read Huckleberry Finn again.
Catherine's in like the cult. Or basically
Catherine. So I have like so many thoughts on Mark Twain and his just like legacy as a writer and the way he writes about race. But also like I know and love Huck Finn so much and so well that this book was just so in my lane, which is part of why I loved it so much. Anyway, I just want to fully elaborate because that's important context for like every opinion I have about this. But I have not read other books by this author, though reading the reviews, it's clear that he has a very dedicated following. So I'm very interested in his other books because I saw a lot of commentary on his other reads in the reviews.
He has a lot of books. Like in the physical copy, there are 3 pages of his other works. I have not read them, but I would be intrigued now.
Yeah. I saw online a lot of people recommending, I think it's pronounced Erasure. You think? It's the one that American Fiction, the movie, was made based off of. And so I think that that's maybe his like next most popular because it's the one that was turned into a movie. Because yeah, I haven't read any of his other books, but I would definitely be interested in reading them. With Mark Twain, yeah, I read Tom Sawyer also. And growing up in Missouri, you get a lot of Mark Twain. Like fourth grade is like the Missouri year where you like learn Missouri history. And I remember we learned a lot about Mark Twain. We probably read like a fourth grade version of Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn that year. And then I read it again as a senior, but I think that I've just read those two. I don't know if I've read any other books by him.
If you want to know how Missouri Mark Twain is, like Silver Dollar City in Branson, Missouri has a ride based on Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn on the river and the raft and stuff.
Are you talking about Lost River?
Nope. There's a separate one.
I don't know which one you're talking about.
You can like shoot water guns from rafts.
Oh, it flooded mine?
Nope. Still not.
Caitlin, okay, we can talk about it later. Children. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
We're both Missourians who go to Silver Dollar City.
I haven't read Percival Everett's books, but I've heard of them. And I've like looking at the covers, I was like, I've definitely seen them before and I've considered them. Mark Twain, I have only read Tom Sawyer and then like a brief version of Huck Finn. And then also I took a Missouri authors class while at Mizzou. So, you know, we delved into Mark Twain, but like the professor, I think, had a grudge against Mark Twain because he was like, I'm not going to force you to read a book by Mark Twain. So we read like an essay or like a short story from Mark Twain. I forget what it was called, but we read a lot of different like poems and other Missouri authors. One of the books we read for that class was Gone Girl. Definitely recommend that book. So yeah, I would definitely be interested in reading more Percival Everett after this.
It's super embarrassing that you both took Missouri literature classes at Mizzou and I did not. I took Brit Lit.
Yeah. Maybe you grew up in it, so you didn't really
want
it.
It's in your blood. My cousins actually are from Hannibal, where Mark Twain is from. And so I've like been to the cave that's like supposedly based off of the cave from Tom Sawyer. And
my mom always talks about that.
Yeah, they have like a fence whitewashing competition every year, like for the kids in Hannibal. My cousins always did that growing up. So yeah, I feel like if you grew up in Missouri, like Mark Twain is just like a figure that like, even if you haven't read a lot by him, I feel like you just hear a lot from him and kind of have this like Mark Twain ingrained in you.
Right.
And if you have late elementary age kids, the Mark Twain Award list is a great reading list to have your kids read off of. I'll just throw that out there. Fantastic nominations on those.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, all things considered, you know, Huckleberry Finn is not necessarily that short of a book. I actually think this book is a lot shorter. How is the pacing for y'all?
Well, I already mentioned I read this book fast. So I mean, I read a lot, but I would not say that I like plow through books super quickly. And I just like read a little bit consistently. And I read this in like 3 settings. And I think if I had the time, I could have sat down and just read it in a day. I didn't feel like it dragged at any point for me.
I second that. I think it was 3 sittings over the course of 3 days. It was never something I was trying to put down. It was something that, you know, you just had to go work or do whatever. So I think it was really well paced and a quick enough read. I do think it would probably, it takes a second to get into the dialect of the book, but once you get it, it's like a breeze.
Yeah. I'm curious what the audiobook is like. I have not seen any. Did you do the audiobook, Catherine?
I did do the audiobook. And wow. I listened to it in 2 days. So it's a very quick audiobook. It's only like 7 hours, like 50 something minutes. And I normally listen on like 1.5 speed if I'm like normally listening. If I'm on a deadline, it's like 2.5 time speed. But
she has done 4 before. She's psycho.
That is insane.
Yeah, I am a little psychotic when it comes to that. Anyway, but I just listened to it at 1.5 times speed and I could get it done basically in 2 days while I was just like doing other things and multitasking. And actually the audiobook's really good. Like the narrator, I 10 out of 10 recommend.
Yeah, as I was reading it and you have like the phonetic spelling and the dialect, there were multiple times that I was like, I feel like a narrator would do a better job with this than me in my head.
Yeah, I very similar to y'all. I read this also like traveling. And so I think I read this in 1 day just because I was like at the airport and just kind of on the plane and like banged it out in 1 day. And yeah, it, really no part of the book dragged for me. I was super interested the whole time. And so, yeah. I had no problems with pacing.
Well, this is kind of a weird question for like a classic retelling, but would you watch a movie or TV show for this specific retelling?
No. I mentioned how dark it got. I don't really need to. I like my dark things on pages, not on the screen.
Yeah.
I feel like it goes back to what we were saying about plot versus character development, where it's like there's a plot, there's stuff that would happen in a TV show or a movie, but the like richness of the text is what's going on internally with Jim. And so I feel like that would be difficult to translate.
Yeah, I agree. Also, the ending does get like fantastical and very dark, and I just can't imagine it translating to film like at all.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. Busy girl ratings.
Most exciting point of the episode.
Would our guest like to go first?
Sure. I consider myself a very busy girl.
You are.
Yeah, you are.
And so I give this a 5 for busy girl rating because, like I said, I read it so quickly, really plowed through it. It's interesting because it has, and this is how you know that Percival Everett is such a good writer, because I want to say it's an easy read, like you go through it quickly, but it's not an easy read, you know, to be able to like write something so complex, so well done, so beautifully written, so smart, mm-hmm. and yet it be like so quick and readable. It's just like chef's kiss. It's just like, it's really like a masterpiece book, I think. And so, you know, I'm pretty sure that I read like 40% of it in two settings. And I'm pretty sure like the back 60% I read in one setting, because I just didn't want to put it down. It's definitely worth your time when you're busy.
Yeah. Big plus one to that.
Yeah. Plus yep. two to that as well.
Add a third.
Wow. All in wow. agreement.
Perfect five busy yeah. girls. It's been a while since that's happened.
All right, everybody. Get this book.
I mean, it was a Pulitzer Prize finalist.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I actually normally hate the Pulitzer
Prize. So fair.
Yes. Like, yeah. They're normally...
No, really we love Damon Copperhead.
Yeah, but a lot of them are long and boring. Like, I'll be real. A lot of them
Damon
are.
Copperhead's long. That's yes. not a busy girl book.
Yeah. Long and not boring. I think of, like, All the Light We Cannot See, which was just, like, the slowest drag ever for me. Like, But yes, it is short and critically acclaimed, which is a great combo.
Yeah, you don't get a book that gets so much critical praise and yet is widely accessible to your average reader. And I think part of that, too, is the familiarity of Huck Finn, mm-hmm. that so mm-hmm. many people have read it or are at least familiar with it. And so it makes the book feel more accessible, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, are you guys ready for our spoiler alert section?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Trigger warnings, slavery, murder, abusive parents.
Yeah, rape.
Lots of dark things. Yeah, rape. So, know what you're getting into.
Yes, where Huck Finn was marketed as a children's book, this is not a children's book. This no. is for adults.
Definitely yeah. not.
Yeah.
Caitlin, I'm interested to hear, Caitlin Brown, I'm interested to hear your thoughts, since it sounds like everybody else, you know, had more of like a personal connection to Huck Finn. I actually do kind of think it's extremely helpful to have read Huck Finn before reading this book. But what did you think? You were kind of the outlier there.
So when other Caitlin pitched it to me, I had been kind of reluctant because I had not read Huck Finn. And she was like, I don't think you need to have read it to appreciate James. And I would agree with that. I think I knew just enough about, you know, Huck Finn's general story and Mark Twain and all that and the area to appreciate it and like see where it was going. I did then, you know, I spark notes it so that I would know where it diverged, which was very helpful. But I don't think you have to. I think the points are driven home whether you know the story or not.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like I had said to you before, I don't think you have to have read it. I think that your reading experience is probably enhanced and richer mm-hmm. if you have read it. There are probably some things that you would miss if you haven't read Huck Finn, but that shouldn't like stop you from reading it. Obviously, you still gave it 4 stars. Like that's still really high praise.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. I think like any remake, you're more aware of some of the commentary is obvious, but you're more aware of some of the departures and like the intentionality of that if you've read the book before. But also, even though Huck Finn is like very present in like American literature, most people like probably the last time they read it was like 10 or 20 years ago. And so, you know, just because you've read it before doesn't mean you like remember everything.
Well, I actually busted out my high school copy of Huck Finn. I still have it.
And nice.
I know. I got it out because I like it had been so long since I'd read it. And so as I was reading James, I was like, does this happen in Huck Finn? And I actually got it out to like jog my memory a little bit. And I just kind of like skimmed a little bit my Huck Finn. And I had like stuff highlighted and underlined. So it's kind of funny to see what like 17-year-old Caitlin had highlighted from that book. And I feel like it is about like halfway through the book that it makes a big turn, makes more of a significant departure. But for sure, like the first half of Huck Finn, I would say is pretty, it is on the page in James.
Yeah, I think you definitely can read it without the base knowledge of Huck Finn, but to really love it and enjoy it fully, I think you do need to have at least a Spark Notes like level of information about Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer and the world that you're diving into, because I think it will help you like appreciate the dialect and appreciate the setting a lot more.
I will say Spark Notes has improved drastically since we were in high school. Some good stuff on there.
I used it in college.
I still use it because if I am not enjoying a book, I'll DNF it and look up the Spark Notes to find out how it ended. Goodness. I just did that the other day.
That's so funny.
I'm like, because I'm a busy girl. I do not have time to read books that I'm not enjoying, but I still want to know what happens. So I'll just look it up.
Right.
That's fair.
Okay. So our next question is about, you know, what did you think of the author's use of Twain's kind of dialect language and satirical writing, which the author uses and then adds new commentary? I'll say Jim, from my memory, he is sort of this like very goofy, but also like very smart character, even in Huck Finn. And so it was really interesting for me to see the author like twist that a little further, because even in like Mark Twain's version, Jim is clearly like a very intelligent person. And so to get more of the actual interiority of Jim and also the kind of obvious like abolitionist perspective, I thought was really, really good.
Yeah, I think when I read my review where it's like, this author needs to read Twain, I was like, I think he read Twain. I think he understands Twain.
I was like, thinking that when you read that. I was feel like this is such an ode to Twain.
Yeah, because I feel like he definitely understood Twain, because like Mark Twain gets a lot of like critique for his books, especially like some of the language in it. And there are some fair critiques, but also like thinking of the time period in the context. But also Twain was very much so digging at the structures that were in place in the slave South. And he was using that through a lens in which like he could get away with it in society that was okay with this stuff. So it's very interesting. And I think adding in that modern lens without totally like taking you out of the setting was a very like well done by Everett, because like you definitely could have added in a lot more anecdotes about slavery and like the immorality of it, and it would have taken you out of it because it would have not been authentic to the time period. But then because James was like such an interesting character that was playing two sides of a different coin and holding down a lot of his rage and anger and just trying to survive, it made things so much more real and interesting. And like obviously like Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer are both like 10-year-old boys, like they're very, very young, so they don't really see the full world, they don't really understand it, but they're trying to like be like these pirates and these vagabonds and these robbers. And then now you're seeing it from the perspective of an adult that is really just trying to survive in a world that's trying to own him, and that brings in a very new, darker twist to the tale while also keeping like the satire and the funniness of Twain, which is weird to say.
Yeah, I think I've already raved about the writing, but yeah, the way that he like, it feels like you're reading a Twain novel, you know, like it definitely like plops you back into reading Huck Finn with like the language and the satire and like the like irony and the kind of like the silliness and caricatures, but also the darkness at the same time. Like just the way that he did that was so well done. And Catherine, I think that you really put it perfectly by saying that this is like a reclaiming of Huck Finn, you know, not a retelling. I'm going to start using that phrase, reclaiming, rather than retelling, because I've told people this is a retelling of Huck Finn, but it's really a reclaiming of Huck Finn, especially from an adult perspective. Because yeah, the original is meant to be kind of like a fun, silly story with these kids, But I would say, you know, most people, if you went back and read Huck Finn then as an adult, you like see all of these glaring like, oh, and it makes you rethink things and you see what Twain is like trying to say. And Everett just like so masterfully communicates that without like it being in your face. You know what I mean? Because like you said, it would take you out of it if he was being too pointed.
Yes. Okay. So there's also one of the kind of like new developments, like a twist in the story, is that there's this code switching that the slaves do. So they talk in this dialect that Twain made famous for writing. And then when white people aren't around, they talk like in modern proper English. What did you guys think about that?
Once you figured it out, genius. So genius. It was, you know, language and the ability to grasp language and read and write your own story becomes kind of the crux of the book, of the story. And just that first one, he's like trying to play along with the boys and they're switching. You're like, what are they doing? And then add them further and further along you get, you realize how powerful it is to be able to do that. And it ended up being like the best part of the narrative.
I like too, just the point about it making white people more comfortable and like how much slaves had to like reaffirm white people's impression of them as like a safety mechanism. Because, you know, obviously we know like slaves were not allowed to read and write. And, you know, a slave knowing math or knowing how to read was considered threatening. And so I thought it was like a really interesting way to demonstrate just the dynamic of like, you know, these people were smart, but they also like were put in a position where like it was in their best interest to not show that.
Yeah, I thought it was so brilliantly done. Like you were saying, Caitlin, like when you realize what's going on, I was like really taken aback. And I think that that's what like hooked me with the book too. But so when I was reading it, I loved it. But I did like reflect and I was like, I am a white lady that lives in the Midwest in 2024. And I did look up some just like book talker reviews of this book from Black creators, because I was curious to like get that perspective. And for the most part, like the, and you know, this is a small sampling. The videos that I watched were like very much had the same impression as me. I did see one gal had like a really long video that she did not like it because of it being so pandering to white people. And it is, but I think that that's like what he was trying to get at, you know? And so, I did like take a pause and I was like, I want to get this perspective from someone that has a different lens than me. So I'd encourage you to read some reviews and videos maybe from some Black creators as well on this book, because they just have such a unique perspective that's different than mine.
Right.
That is so interesting. Yeah, I definitely will do that after this, because I just finished this book like literally 3 hours ago. So I haven't had a time to like really sit in on it. But yeah, that is really cool and interesting, because I really like the code switching, because it like we add the word code switching right now as like modern day people who know about these kind of things that people, when they're in different groups of people, act differently and they talk differently. Like I'll add on a Southern drawl whenever I'm trying to get tips and like trying to get people to do things for me. So it was very interesting, because I think it also gave Jim and like the people around him, it made them so much more intelligent and so much more empathetic to like their situation, but also because it definitely made it, flipped it on its head, where the caricatures of people were to the white people and not to the slaves, which was super interesting, because it was just like, well, yeah, the white people think we're dumb, but we actually are playing it up and we think they're dumb. And I'm like, yes. Oh, that's really smart.
Like, well, in the like language, the way they spoke, not around the white people, they definitely seemed more educated and
yeah.
more well-rounded.
Well, because they knew like education was such a privilege and like they wanted desperately to have like that knowledge and that thirst for that power that white people just like took for granted in the book.
I do also, I want to give props to the book just because I also felt just generally it like made slavery a little bit more real to me. I feel like pretty much every like piece of media, whether it's books or movies or whatever, tries to do this where it like humanizes this real but like very hard to comprehend part of history. Because like, you know it happened, we know it was horrible, but it's really hard to like actually like think of and like feel what that might have felt like because it's just so far removed from what we experience. And I felt like this book had the perfect cadence of like tragedy and humor, to the point that it just made it feel so real to me. And I, there were parts of the book where I felt just like completely devastated. And like, I think that's a real testament because I also think the author just didn't try to do too much. Like this book is really short. We just reviewed The Women, which I think is a good example of a book that tries to do a little too much. And so I think by really honing in on this very specific piece of a story, he like managed to like really do a lot with it.
So we kind of talk about, you know, the code switching and how that changes your perspective, but it also makes you realize that the slaves are seeing Tom and Huck and their shenanigans, and you get more of Huck than Tom once the story moves on, but you see they're seeing it totally different. They're playing along because they want to appease the white boys. And then I don't know, you kind of you get dropped on it later that Huck is James's illegitimate child, and you're like, and that once again shifts your perspective of how James sees Huck. What do you guys think about like this evolving dynamic?
That was wild. I was not expecting that at all. It made me like want to go back and reread it from that perspective to like reread their interactions. I thought it was like creatively done and well done, but it just was very unexpected. But I think like I appreciated the ways that he did change the story, that like it wasn't the exact same plot. And it, I don't know, I think that it kind of redeemed that like father figure storyline from the original book.
So since I've taken a college class where this book was one of the crowning novels, this is one of the parts that I found really interesting because Huck Finn has been the source of like much study among like professors and literature people who focus on like early American literature. And one of the big points of fascination is Jim, because he's a huge part of Huck Finn and a huge part of Tom Sawyer too. And his motivations and his reasonings are like very mysterious and interesting, but never gone into. So this book kind of does that. But the fact that Huck is Jim's son is actually kind of gently implied in the original book. And a lot of people don't catch it because you'd have to be like, you know, an American English professor to like be that deep into it and to like make that many like guesses about it. But Mark Twain's other stories deal a lot with the concept that there's like white people who have like African heritage and just don't know. And he wrote this whole story about these twins that were separated at birth, and are these two kids, and like one of them has black heritage and the other doesn't, but they both like are white passing. And so anyway, my point is just that like this is something that Mark Twain writes about like actually like very often in all of his stories. And so this like inspiration for this actually like came from Mark Twain, because there are scholars who feel like Huck Finn was like implied to be like a white passing person who was Jim's son, which I thought was really interesting because he obviously took it and made it an obvious part of a book instead of like a subtle undertone.
Yeah, I read that in one of the reviews I read, and I was like, well, I missed that when I was in school. I had no idea.
Along those lines, though, then how does that make you feel about the choice that James makes to leave Huck behind with his adoptive white folks when he heads north? Like, he kind of is like, get out, go past his white, get away. And Huck's just craving a father figure, and he leaves him behind.
I mean, I think he's trying to make sure that his son can live his best life. And he knows that the life of a slave, especially like a runaway slave, even if he's white passing, will be hard, because like back then it's the one drop rule. If you have any percentage of African ancestry, you are considered black in America. So once he's labeled as that, he can never take that back. And so Jim, his entire life, is trying to make sure that like his children are safe. And that includes Huck, even if it means like pretending that he's not his son and that he is a white boy. And I thought it was really interesting delving into that like fatherhood figure and how you see Jim's daughter, and then you also see Huck, and like two different sides of the same coin where they have the same father but very, very different upbringings. And I loved how these characters unfurled, and I thought it gave Huck so much more depth than like the normal like silly antics of Huck Finn. And like, I don't know, it's just I the whole idea of white passing, and it's like throughout the book as well with Norman, was just super interesting for that specific time period. Cause I would have never thought that there would even be people who were white passing at this time when slavery still existed.
Yeah.
Well, and then he makes the choice to save Huck over Norman. And my heart was ripped apart. I'm like, no, yes, but no. But then you're like, well, it's his son.
Yeah. That part of the book effed me up. I like that he left Huck, because I think it's also a statement just on how like deep the divide is between white and not white, even if that divide is completely imagined. Like technically both of these men have African history ancestry. Neither of them are like dark skinned, but like, and they're both human beings, obviously, but like none of that stuff matters. Like Huck's experience living as a white person is just like this giant divider that makes him and Jim just like almost unable to relate to each other, because Jim knows that Huck is his son, but he doesn't really consider him part of his family. Mm-hmm. And like, but how could he when like he's living as a white person? And that's like a gift, because it's, you know, objectively better. Like you have all these privileges and you're not a slave. But you know, even if Huck knows that, it's like, how could he ever live with Jim or have a meaningful familial relationship with him when it would mean like sacrificing whiteness?
Yeah, it's like so heart-wrenching when like Huck puts it together and he's like, I'm going to be black, I'm going to be a slave with you. And Jim is like, no. and you get that. Yeah. Like in that moment, Jim like wants the best life for Huck. And he recognizes that like the best life for him is to continue to be in a white family and be considered white. And it's just so heart-wrenching because Huck has had a white dad that's terrible and that abused him, and that Jim has cared for him in a way that like his, you know, I guess adoptive dad never did. Mm-hmm. And so it also speaks to like the innocence of a child. And the way that like, you know, Huck could see throughout the book, you see where he like, you know, he understands the difference between Jim and, you know, him, and, you know, sees those lines, but ultimately he was like, well, no, I'm going to go be with you. And he doesn't fully understand why Jim is like, no, this is a better life for you.
Yeah.
Well, and then he's like, if I can't be with you, I'm going to go join the army and fight for freedom.
Yeah.
You're like, well, you're 10.
Yeah, I know. It's so sweet. It's like, sweet little 10-year-old boy.
And that's what I love too, though, is that even in these moments of like intense gravity and like racial tension and critique, there's like humor, right? Like Huck is still a little boy and he's still like perfectly written as this like little boy.
Yeah, he's naive, but also he does see the world for kind of what it is, because there's moments where he's questioning the systems that are in place and he's just like, why can I own you? Like, that doesn't seem right. Like, but then he has moments of like naivete where he's just like, I'm going to be a pirate and I'm going to believe that this guy's a king and believe this guy's a lord. Like, just believing things and believing stories. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Huck Finn's kind of like just an adorable character.
Mm-hmm. He's very honors the original version of the book as well. Okay, so one of the very important settings of the book is the Mississippi River. It's, you know, the setting for most of the book. It's also kind of this like symbol for freedom, and you kind of go along the river to like cross into a free state. There's also a lot of obviously social and religious commentary in the book. What did y'all think of all that?
I liked most of it. Maybe I'm just not sophisticated enough for it, but the thing I could have done without was the hallucinations of the philosophers that were there to make some social statements, but were bizarre, in my opinion. Like, I get why they were there, but also, I don't know. I could have done without them. But otherwise, I really liked all the commentary.
I have one other like huge like nerd comment to make, and it relates to the philosophers. So the essay that I wrote in my Mark Twain class was about evaluating the actual like intention of the satire in Mark Twain's writing. Mark Twain as a person was against slavery and obviously like very critical of the institution. But in like modern study of his books, like there's actually a lot to be said about the fact that he falls very short of actually like reprimanding the system. And so one of the biggest parts of that in Huckleberry Finn is the ending, because Jim returns home. And in that version of the book, his owner had like already written to free him. So like it's sort of this confounding thing where you read this whole book kind of evaluating like the humanity of Jim, and they're on this whole journey, and then he gets home and the whole point of it is invalidated. And like then the ending is sort of like, well, white people did the right thing. So like there's a way, there's this thing in satire where like people read it and assume that they're in on the joke and that the joke is about someone else, unless you make it like really harsh and cutting. Anyway, so that is just groundwork to say that like Mark Twain's books also have been critiqued because like the level of satire is not necessarily like ultimately that critical of slavery. But Percival said that when he wrote this book, he imagined himself having a conversation with Mark Twain basically about that, and about, you know, these kind of philosophical ideas about ownership and abolition, and like what did he really believe about that stuff, and like why did he write a book that was sort of both a critique of slavery and also kind of apologized for like did both critique and fail to critique the institution. And that's part of why the philosophers are in the book, is just like for him to have that debate in like a literal way in the story and not just like about the plot asking that question.
I liked the philosophers. It's cool. And maybe that's my political science nerdiness, because I like read about these Enlightenment thinkers and I like actually have read their work, so it's very funny watching these like white men, a lot of them,
I'm
like
a poli sci major too. I just was like, you're taking away from my story, get back to the action.
I don't know, I like that kind of stuff where it's just like critiquing these like crusty old white men who talked about freedom but also were like revolutionaries who were just like murdering people. And it was like, okay, there's a lot of like critiques of the systems that they it thought of in the confines of their privilege.
Yeah, I didn't mind the philosophers. I'm normally not like big on magical realism in my books. I think it's growing on me the more that I read. And so I feel like it was fine. It didn't bother me. But I also, I feel like it was just lending to the character development, like we were saying, you know, to like lean into that character development of Jim as the plot is moving along. But I also, it does make me wonder, like, could you have taken all that out and done the character development a different way? I think probably. It was maybe, I don't know, a little self-indulgent, but I didn't mind it. I thought it was fine.
Yeah, I agree. I really liked it, even if I was like, I would say that was the most heavy-handed part of the book. Like everything else mm-hmm. was like felt like a little bit more finesse. And that was just like, no, we're getting to the point here.
I do think the best tool of commentary was the minstrel group and how the man hired him and then how they portrayed the slaves. And it was like this total like inception kind of thing. And the slaves were like, why are they doing that? You know, we do that to make fun of them, you know, like it was so interesting. And then that brought in Norman too. But seeing how that man was like, I don't like people who own slaves, but then bought a slave and thought he was in the right and then eventually flipped. Like there was so much in that section where they're with the minstrels that was just insane and made you have to like stop and like calculate, okay, who's fooling who here, but also like what's this saying about society? And even the progressive people of the time were not actually progressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my favorite was the pencil. Mm-hmm. I just loved like how many times it like came back into the narrative and just like the crushing story of like hearing that the slave was like lynched for stealing it and just like the burden of that. I thought it was like a really like powerful just kind of recurring presence.
Yeah, like the power of writing and the power of the written word and how it can get you killed and it can get people around you killed just for stealing like 3 inches of a pencil.
Yeah, it was maybe kind of like an obvious symbol, but still like so gut-wrenching of, yeah, the power of being able to read and write. And that is such a theme throughout the book.
Okay, so one of the biggest characters who is not really in Huck Finn, he comes up in this period of time that is in Huck Finn, where it's just like Jim's lost days, where he gets separated from Huck. And as a reader in Mark Twain's version, you never figure out really like what happens to Jim during that time. And there's a lot of discussion about just like what the hell happened. And now we have, you know, a version of the answer. And that brought us to Norman, who is a white passing guy who is performing in this minstrel group, and he's a runaway slave. And he and Jim end up really connecting. And so, yeah, I mean, what did you think of Norman and his kind of struggles with his identity?
I think what was most interesting was when you were following James's thought process of even he was unsure if he was Black. Mm-hmm. And is he tricking me into this to actually sell me? Or did he trick me into thinking up the scheme myself? Like, he's having these doubts that you're like, whoa, he has jumped 20 steps ahead. And it's like one circle, you know, one cycle of thought that gets him back to the same point every time. But the number of thoughts he had to have to decide if he could trust Norman was so great. And then Norman's afraid of the slave girl, and it's just like the dynamics were very interesting, and how being white passing also meant he had to be cruel to his own people, and mm-hmm. that was upsetting to both of them. It was very interesting. And like I said, when he did not choose Norman, I understood, but it also broke my heart.
Yeah, him losing Norman really stuck with me. I was honestly so sad. I feel like I had a whole day where I was kind of depressed about it. Because they really had a friendship. I felt like very attached to him. And the part about him I liked the most was that I think you kind of once again get to see like the irrelevance of appearance play out and like the irrelevance of race, like the whole fact that like race is kind of this like social thing that they created. Because Norman was a slave because of this like one drop rule, but white people have no idea about that. But then you see how his experiences as a slave, like, train him to have certain thoughts and reactions in these spaces. So, like, he struggles to assert himself. He struggles to communicate with white people, to look them in the eye, to, like, behave of it as if he's, like, this kind of, like, untouchable boss because he's lived his life, like, in fear. And I thought that was very interesting and impactful.
Yeah, because he even says it's hard for him to pass as white even after doing it for so many years, because he's seen both sides of it. And especially because he has a wife and children who are slaves, and he's desperately trying to get back to them. It's very, which makes it even so much more heartbreaking that he ends up maybe or maybe not dead. It just makes the commentary of, and I think it was very interesting reading this after reading The Vanishing Half. Like, we read that a lot of Busy Girls episodes ago. And knowing about that story and talking, that one really delved in deep into white passing and trying to, like, shirk your ancestry and your history in order to fit into society's, like, power structures. And so adding that to this book was very, very interesting as a commentary on that system.
It's also interesting, like, this is the part that he's separated from Huck, and he basically picks up another Huck, because like, and yeah. I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too deeply about this, but like, Norman is like who Huck could be, you know, like as an adult, someone who passes for white. And so it's interesting because like, Norman was living this, you know, white passing life, and yet he was so stressed all the time, you know, like you guys have already verbalized. And Jim was the one, like, advising him and kind of telling him, like, hey, dude, get it together. And, you know, it was like, again, kind of enforcing that, like, father figure of Jim, like how he was watching out for Huck. And then now he's got Norman that he's kind of leading along the way as well. And then, yeah, he had to ultimately make a choice between the two, and just gut wrenching.
Okay. I think it's finally time to talk about the ending. Which does get very intense. I mean, Jim has this whole kind of character arc where he becomes, like, more radical and just desires more change, and kind of becomes more open to not only the idea of, like, change, but the idea of revenge, which I liked because the book frames it as, like, this is his only way to get justice. Like, justice does not exist, and so this is his only way to get a version of justice. But anyway, so they foreshadow the whole time that he'll name himself. He does. He renames himself, and then there's this whole dark journey where he kills one of, like, the rapist overseers of the slaves, and then goes and frees his wife and child. What did you guys think of the ending?
I disliked this character arc because Jim became the aggressor he disliked in other people. Do I understand why he did most of it? Yes. Like, he was just so driven to free his wife and child. Did he have to kill Hopkins? No. Did he have to kill the owner of the place where his wife and daughter were being kept? No. Those are things he ended up choosing to do. He chose not to kill the judge, which was interesting. But he went from trying to educate Huck and kind of just trying to, like, being focused on being free, getting his family, and, like, wanting the ability to read, to just kind of, like, it was, got really sinister the way he kind of, like, lit everything aflame and ran, literally. And it was really powerful how he renamed himself. But I just didn't like, I was so attached to Jim James throughout the novel and his upstanding character. And then he just kind of snapped, and it made me really sad.
Yeah, I had similar feelings. I loved the end because I love a dramatic ending. And it doesn't get much more dramatic than the end of this book. But yeah, I think, like, my, like, own personal, like, reading preferences is I like a book that like ends on a hopeful note. You know, I like for there to be hope at the end. And the end of this book, it did not feel super hopeful. It felt more ragey. And I think that that is like what Everett was getting at. You know, I think that a lot of really difficult things happen in this book. And it does make James at that point so much more cynical and angry. And I think that that is real and accurate. And like I mentioned, like I am a white lady. I'm not going to understand like the deep hurt and anger that comes from, you know, generational slavery. And so even though like I wanted it to end more like hopeful, that is also like my, like, I want everything tied up with a pretty bow too. So,
yeah.
I mean, I liked that he killed the guy that was doing the breeding farm thing. Like, I was cool with that one, especially because I knew like he was going to shoot the other slaves if he hadn't done it. And so I was fine with that one. I was also kind of fine with Hopkins too, especially because he basically said that, yeah, he was raping the slaves. So, yeah, I mean, like, I think it just goes to show, like, when you're in a system of deep injustice, vigilante justice becomes your only option or death. Mm-hmm. And that's the unfortunate thing.
I understand the ending. I was just disappointed then that his daughter he had just rescued watched him shoot a man point blank. You know, like,
yes,
that's just not who he was in the beginning. And it made me sad for him, which I understand is like the whole point. But I wanted a more hopeful ending, like Caitlin said.
Well, and like the beginning of the book very much so felt like Huck Finn and felt like more of a children's book. And then the ending was definitely not a children's book.
No. Like, so, did those people deserve to meet a punishment of some sort? Yes. But did James need to be the one to do it? Ugh, I don't know. No.
I think, too, whenever it ended, I did have the thought, like, well, where do you go from here? You know, like, I wanted, like, a second book because it does feel a little bit like, okay, you just, like, burned everything to the ground. You know, what happens next? It was, like, a little hard for me to, like,
what happened to how he was
going to move forward. Yeah.
Okay. So I liked Jim's character arc. Part of the reason I liked it is because I mentioned this earlier. The original Huck Finn has this very idyllic, like, let's apologize to white people and like make white people feel comfortable again ending. And so the author to me clearly made a very intentional choice that we're doing the opposite of that. And so I think stylistically it was like a very intentional departure that I thought like had a lot of meaning. I also think that like, it was actually a fantasy. Like it was like Jim's fantasy or like what a slave's like fantasy ending could have been, because like what, like that could not have happened. And so instead of having this like, oh, Jim's free and like white people did the right thing, it was like, if a slave like has no other way out, this is like their fantasy of retribution and being able to actually free their family and actually achieve freedom. And how else would they have done that? Like how else, if you're in this society, would you have been able to like reclaim your freedom and your choice without making these kinds of choices? And like, yeah, like violence, you know, like if you live in a violent system, you can't just be like, we're going to escape and everything is okay now because we're just going to get out. And so to me, I thought the violence of it all was sort of like fantastical in a way, because that would have been like, you know, I mean, I don't know what, you know, slaves would have thought, but I imagine like the character of Jim, he's still in bondage and his fantasy would be like, I'm going to get retribution on all these people who like hurt my family and hurt people I know, and I'm going to go free them. Like it was like an action movie. And so I kind of liked that. I actually felt like it was sort of like this idyllic, like fairy tale, like revenge arc that, you know, was like a fantasy. And so I thought that was great. that Jim kind of got the retribution and like the fuck you and like the we're not going to apologize and make nice with people and like not do violence when this is what's been done to us. And if we want to reclaim our autonomy and stop going along with this system, then there's no other way to do that but violence.
Yeah, violence begets violence always. And so it's very 100% echo what you said. That was, I think, really interesting to see him also reclaiming himself, where he was just like, I'm going to choose a biblical name, despite his like aversion to the Bible basically the entire time. Yeah. And he's like, I am James. I'm going to talk how I want to talk. I'm educated. I am pissed off. And I want my family, and I will get them by whatever means necessary. And I think that was truly the best way you could have ended that chapter and that story.
Yeah.
Because I do like it better than him just going back and being freed. Because I knew that was how Huck Finn ended. And so, like, you know, as you're getting towards the end of the book, I was like, how is this going to wrap up? And yeah, it was just like,
I kind of thought he was going to end up dead.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if you think, like, it was like a very gutsy choice to like have this like crazy ending. But also, like, what were the alternatives? Like,
yeah,
you know, like the realistic endings were like depressing and horrible. Like, it almost like was kind of a statement that, like, to empower Jim, you had to make this kind of grand, like, violent, like, resistive statement and stand.
Anyone? Field of Dreams. Is this heaven? No, this is Iowa. That's how it ends. That's all I could think about. It's like, Iowa, of all places.
Okay. Well, Catherine has left a very interesting final question for us in the document. It is, if you could choose a character from another classic lit novel to have their own story, who would it be?
Luckily, I actually did read the questions ahead for once. And so I had thought about this as we've been talking. And I would choose Boo Radley from To Kill a Mockingbird.
That is such a good one. Now I want that
choice.
Yeah, I want that too.
Yeah, I'm jealous of that choice.
He's similarly like mysterious, but also misunderstood. And I'd just love to hear his perspective of like the weird neighbor kid spying on him, thinking he's a ghost and stuff. And then like his take on the whole story.
Okay, I have one. So I'm terrible. I don't even remember the names of these characters anymore. But in The Great Gatsby.
Daisy Buchanan.
I want Daisy's perspective. Mm-hmm.
That's literally what I was going to say.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's because her choices, man, they're quite something.
And I do feel like the book just kind of steamrolls her, when in fact she actually had a lot of agency in the book, and we're never really understand her. And like the book does show that like the main character has idealized her to an extent that's problematic. But I think it would be interesting to get the real version of like a real human being and not this like romantic idealized.
Well, and now that we've learned more about F. Scott Fitzgerald stealing a lot of the ideas for that book from his wife.
Yeah.
That starts to make sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah. No, I feel like if we could get that rewritten into Daisy's perspective by his wife.
Yeah. Iconic.
I did not see these questions ahead of time.
Yeah, we're putting on the spot.
You can take a question. Minute. Yeah. I don't know. I was trying to like look at classic books that I've read and try to jog my memory. My first inclination is like one of the other sisters from Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to decide which one. I'm like, I want all of them. I think Lydia, the one that doesn't run up with Wickham, would be really funny commentary.
Yeah.
Because like her like sister that she's really close with runs off, and there's like all these other shenanigans, and she's just kind of like left in the middle of it. But really any of the sisters would be fun. There is a book out, and I do not remember what it's called, that is a retelling from is it Mary? Is she the one that like plays the piano?
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yes. It's like about her. I'm going to have to look it up afterwards.
Yeah. I've brought this up before and they hate when I bring it up. There is this really cheesy book that is about Lydia and about why she ran off with Mr. Wickham. And it's called The Scandalous Confessions of Lydia Bennet, Witch. And it, like, she's secretly a witch. And that's why all these things happen. And she ends up in this predicament. And
was it Lydia? Quirky. Was it Lydia?
Did I get them confused? Is it Lydia that runs off? Okay. I was thinking of Kitty.
I think Kitty has a crush on him, then Lydia runs off with him.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The premise in this book is that Kitty is actually a cat, her familiar, that she transforms into a girl to be inconspicuous.
That's pretty fun.
So not at all serious, but really funny. Yeah.
Okay, I have two more I just thought of. So The Sun Also Rises is by Ernest Hemingway. And it is a very interesting story about like post-war depression, like lost generation, like that whole thing. But it's like written from a very masculinist perspective, as like Ernest Hemingway is famous for. And so the whole plot of the book is like there's these two people who have kind of been in love and have this like passion between them for a long time. We're never told what happens, but it's implied that they cannot have a sexual relationship. And so the book is this whole like tension of like lost things and like destroyed by the war and longing for each other and like loving someone but not being able to be with them. And again, it's just very male centric. And I would love to get the perspective instead of the female, the woman who is like the lusted after one. Because the book does have like very misogynistic undertones. Like she's portrayed as like flighty and unfaithful and like unloyal. And I just think that like a lot of justice could be done to her perspective. If that were rewritten from her world. And then I have major beef with Junot Diaz. This is more of my one-sided off beef. I talk about The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde a lot. And I wrote an essay in school about the fact that it should have been written from the perspective of Oscar Wilde's sister and not him. It's actually written mostly from his like boy-based best friend who like grew up with him. It's a whole thing. Anyway, every single woman in that book is more interesting than the male main characters who the story's perspective is about. And so that's my other thing, is it should have been told from the sister of Oscar Wilde and not his friend.
No, you go.
Oh, I had a side tangent, but that did remind me. I did see in that same video that I was watching that had the criticism of like the dialect. Mm-hmm. She mentioned that it was like a very male-centric book. Yeah. And I was like, yes, that is true. I think it's okay. I think it is worth mentioning as like, I mean, he's doing a lot in this book. And so, you know, like trying to speak to like women's rights and women at the time, you know, didn't fit it in. That was a criticism that I saw that I was like, that's fair, but it is a very male-centric book. And she was like, I feel like only a male could have written this book.
Right.
Yeah.
To be fair, partly Mark Twain's fault because there's no women in Huckleberry Finn.
No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he only had 303 pages. I don't think he could have fit in commentary about women's issues.
Yeah.
There already was some.
Yes.
But
yes.
Very boy. Totally fair. Mm-hmm.
I have like a really random one. The Outsiders from the perspective of Dallas.
Interesting.
Because I always was curious about him and like if he was truly just an outlaw to be an outlaw or if like there was some like deep, dark undertones to it. And then he has a very tragic ending. So I just like I'd be very curious to see Dallas's perspective from The Outsiders.
Right.
I've never read that one. Surprisingly. Right.
Oh, call back to our last episode, The Women from Barb's Perspective.
Yes, I love her.
We all like Barb more.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, while we're on the topic of books we'd love to see, do we have any book recommendations for people?
I do.
Okay.
I did come prepared for this question because you guys always do the question. And I love this question. This is one of the questions that as I listen to the podcast, I always like talk back. I'm like, oh, they didn't include this, this recommendation. So one, have any of you guys read The Underground Railroad by Colson Whitehead?
I have.
Yeah. It's very similar vibe, you know, has some magical realism, you know, speaking to, you know, similar issues. So if you like James, I think you would like Underground Railroad. It's very well done. And then I also, I always have to look at the title because it has, I like always get it wrong. It's called How the Word is Passed, A Reckoning of the History of Slavery Across America by Clint Smith. This is a nonfiction book where he looks at, I think, seven different like places or monuments that can play an important role in like the history of slavery in America. And it's super well done. And it like, it kind of, it looks at different places, like some that are really negatively and some positively. He really like gives kind of a good commentary and I don't know. I feel like it's hard to be unbiased, but it's just, it's very informative and kind of like speaks to some of the issues in James, but from a nonfiction perspective, and was published in recent years.
Nice. I feel like The Vanishing Half is, you know, already come up and that's a good one. However, I'm going to say another book. So I read a book called Washington Black. And this is another book that I read for school, but it is essentially did a very similar thing to what this book is doing, where it basically rewrites like very old classic adventure novels. So right, we kind of have a picture in our head of like what those are, like sort of like Indiana Jones. The stereotype is like some white European man goes to a foreign country, like normally in Asia or Africa, and kind of like, you know, quote unquote, discovers things there. And it's like an adventure. There's like very old, like established narratives for this that came up like during, you know, British colonizer times. And the author took those and instead wrote them from like the perspective of the slave sidekick. So it's like follows kind of the arc of like a traditional adventure novel, but instead of being about like the quote unquote like rich adventurer, it's about his assistant who is a slave. And it is very, very interesting. Also like honestly like very tough to read in some parts, but very good.
I've heard of that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I already mentioned The Vanishing Half, so I echo that with Casey. And then also Heaven and Earth Grocery Store.
Good one.
I was thinking along the lines of retellings of classics. And so obviously a recent one that we love, Demon Copperhead, which is David Copperfield. But also, if you're looking at a retelling through a pretty critical lens, Medusa's Sisters is really good. Mm. We're going way classic with that one, but definitely a very critical lens of the story of Medusa and kind of just the suppression of females in the time period, in the myth.
Oh my gosh, sorry. Catherine, this question that you left has sparked so much inside my brain. I would also love the story of Emma told from the perspective of the male love interest.
I almost said that Knightley. One from Mr. Knightley.
Yeah.
Yes. See, I thought of Emma, but I thought of her friend that she's making up all the time.
Yeah, or her friend who's like supposedly this like idiot. Yeah.
Anne?
Yeah.
Is that her name?
No, it's oh God.
I can't remember right now.
I can't remember.
I'm thinking we're going to need like an Instagram question that's like, what story would you see? Because I want to see everyone's thoughts.
Me too. I would eat it up.
Okay. We'll leave that. You guys comment. We'll share it.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. That's all. Kind of a heavy book, but a good one. And we're glad Caitlin joined us again.
Thank you for letting me join. Yeah, Caitlin told me what you guys were recording. I was like, I love both of those books. And I'm glad that Caitlin read it and convinced you guys to read it too.
Yes.
Because it was one of those books. I read it when it like first came out and I was like, I have no one to talk to about this.
No, I was like, this keeps popping up on lists and Caitlin keeps telling me I need to read it. So we better just do it.
Right. But,
okay. See you again in 100 episodes. Yeah. Well, thank you for joining us. Remember, if you want to join our conversation, you can find us everywhere at Busy Girls Pod, busygirlspod.com. We are now on YouTube also. So if you want to feel like you're having a face-to-face combo with us, or if you want to like pause and tell us our opinions are wrong, you can look us in the eyes and do that. So feel free to join in the conversation. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey.
I'm the other Caitlin.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.